I'm your father.
Welcome to Dadawan. I'm Tony Nunes.
And I'm Rick Ribello.
And today we are talking about Star Wars Holiday Special. Now, the Star Wars Holiday Special, for those of you lucky enough to have seen it, you'll know that the holiday in question is a fictional holiday made up in the Star Wars universe called Life Day. So Life Day being fictional and not being Christmas or any particular holiday, we figured we'd record an episode about the holiday special for the new year. So we're bringing in the new year. It's been a big year in Star Wars, so we thought this would be a fun way to kind of end things and start the new year.
Yeah.
But before we do that, Rick, before we go into this wonderful holiday special, let's talk about some of the Star Wars news and how Force Awakens is doing in theaters, which, unsurprisingly, it's breaking record after record.
Yeah. I mean, it looks as if it by the time it's all said and done, it's going to just hold every record.
It's on pace. I mean, it's outpacing Avatar, what Avatar was doing right now. And I think I read, and I didn't read the whole article, I just read a headline, but I think I read that as it stands right now, it's the highest grossing theatrical run of a Star Wars movie. Clearly that was not adjusted for inflation, because there's no way that it would beat the original Star Wars New Hope at this point, just because that movie played for like an entire year.
Yeah, that's back when movies did play, you know, for an entire, you know, before the, I think people forget before the days of VHS that people, you had to actually go to a theater to see a movie, and that back then movies would have a long run because they knew they would milk that thing as long as they could make some money out of it.
Yeah, there's a theater in Rhode Island where I live that I'm helping kind of reinvigorate and reopen next year, and going through the history of it, I found out that the theater played Star Wars for exactly an entire year. Right. It's a one-screen theater. So imagine that, one-screen theater playing the same movie and making money on it for an entire year.
Well, I mean, when you look, when you go to iTunes, you can actually pre-order The Force Awakens already for $20.
I believe it.
So it's amazing how even when a film is so huge theatrically that they're already, you know, they already got the not even DVD, but the digital sale on the pipeline. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, a lot of people say iTunes killed the music industry. Right. And you know, I don't know if I buy that or not. I think, you know, it adapted it, but whatever it did, it's definitely doing for the movie industry as well. Right. So, you know, we're not seeing a lot of first run movies that we normally would have seen even hitting theaters to begin with. So yep. It's an interesting, it's like the Wild West for movie distributors. But Star Wars Force Awakens is doing really well. I anticipate it will be in theaters a bit longer than most movies we see nowadays, just because people are seeing it multiple times.
I agree.
How many times have you seen it?
I've seen it three times.
Three times. I've seen it twice so far. Did you take any of your kids?
No, not yet.
I took my...
I keep asking them. I keep saying, you want to go? And my wife's like, oh, they don't want to... I'm like, okay, whatever.
Okay, well, I took my kids last week, and they loved it. My youngest daughter liked it the most, which was surprising, because originally I wasn't going to take her to begin with.
Right.
I just thought some of it might be over her head. She's only five. But no, she loved it. They loved Rey. I mean, Rey, you know... Mm-hmm. As predicted, is a big hit with them.
Yeah.
My older daughter loves Luke Skywalker, though. That's her favorite character. And,
really? Wow.
And nothing will change that. So I don't know where that comes from, but go figure.
Well, that's a good sign.
So another bit of news, it's not really news because we've kind of known this or predicted this, but Entertainment Weekly ran an article today that had some of the dates solidified for the upcoming Star Wars movies. Mm-hmm. And we know that there's a Star Wars movie coming every year. You know, the pattern's going to be a new prequel movie, then an anthology movie, then a new prequel movie, and so on and so forth. But we have dates. We already knew Rogue One, which is called Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. That's set for December 16th, 2016. Mm-hmm. And that's looking like it's going to be great. That has a really good cast. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for that. But then Star Wars Episode 8, directed and written by Rian Johnson, that is set for May 26, 2017, which is exciting because, you know, we're more prone to Star Wars movies coming out in the summer.
Right.
As opposed to this time.
Well, it's the whole May the 4th be with you philosophy.
Yep. So then we have Star Wars Anthology Han Solo, which is a working title. I'm excited about that one primarily because Lawrence and John Kasdan are writing it.
That's good.
Yeah, but yeah. Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who did the Lego movie, they did the 21 Jump Street reboot, which was actually surprisingly funny.
Yeah, I was shocked by that
one. Yeah, and then they did.
By how much I liked it.
They did Last Man on Earth, the series on Fox. You know, they're really good with comedic quips, which I think will suit a Han Solo prequel movie very well.
Absolutely.
And that's set for May 25th, 2018. And the big, big question is who will play Han Solo and how young will Han Solo be in this series? And, you know, who knows? So then we have Star Wars Episode 9, which is going to be directed by Colin Trevorrow, which I don't know how I feel about that. Yeah. I wasn't a fan of Jurassic World. But that's being written by Rian Johnson.
Yep.
Which is interesting. So hopefully he does good with Episode 8.
Well, I know J.J. Abrams said that after he read his script for Episode 8 that he regretted not directing
it. I saw that as well. Yeah. So that's exciting.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's pretty fascinating.
Rian Johnson, I mean, Looper was a great movie.
Great movie, yeah. He's done some really good stuff.
He has. He's an original. He has an original vision for a lot of his movies, which I think is going to suit Star Wars because Force Awakens, as great as it is it's a film for the fans.
Yes.
More than anything else. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping some of these other movies, you know, instead of relying so much on the fan service,
right,
go into the original storytelling realm a little more.
As you know, Tony, I've said since day one, I'm like, I really have a better feeling about the next movie than Force Awakens. I really think that now that they've gotten it out of the way, that they have an opportunity to do a much better, to really take Star Wars to another level in the next movie. And I from all intents of, you know, from what is being said and what's even being said by the filmmakers, I think I might be right about this, you know, and as much as everybody loves Force Awakens, you know, everybody kind of admits, you know, there's some flaws, there's a few things here and there that, you know, you can't say it's a perfect movie, but it's a great movie. And I really think that they have the ability to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. I really think they might knock it out of the park with the next one.
I agree. I think Force Awakens, in a lot of ways, is Disney's attempt to kind of ratchet up that Star Wars phenomenon level again.
Well, mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished for sure. Because, you know, the Star Wars has always been popular. And over the past few years, even a little before Disney announced that they were taking it on, you know, Star Wars was kind of getting a whole new nostalgic popularity. And then Disney, they definitely reinvigorated the whole thing.
Yeah.
But they felt like they had to do this big fan service. Mm-hmm. I understand it.
Well, I think what Disney has done with all of their intellectual properties, be it this or Marvel, is that they've made them fun. You know, they're fun movies. I think the big thing about watching The Force Awakens is that it's fun. It's enjoyable. You know, it's got its light moments. It's got its dark moments. It's serious when it needs to be serious. It's funny when it needs to be funny. And that's the one thing I have to hand Disney credit for, is they really know how to walk that thin line of just serious enough, just fun enough. You know, when you look, you know, you're looking at things like Captain America and the Avengers and everything else, they've really threaded the needle with that stuff, and you got to hand it to them for that.
They're doing a great job. Yeah. I mean, George Lucas apparently did an interview with Charlie Rose, which I have yet to watch, so I don't know the full context of this, but I read a Variety article that in the interview he he started saying how he sold Star Wars to white slavers.
I don't get that at all.
I guess he stopped the sentence, you know, midway through. So yeah. I don't know that there was context added, but
yeah,
somebody's a little sad that.
Look, he sat on that property for so long doing nothing, and he was completely content to continue to do nothing with it because he wasn't doing anything with it. You know, people forget it. It's been a long time since what was the last prequel film, the Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. Yep.
It's been a long time since that movie.
It has.
It definitely has. And he had no interest in doing anything else. And you know, how could he complain? At least somebody's doing something with it, and they did something successful. And, you know, they stole enough elements from his original story that it's still in the spirit of which he did it. So, yeah, you got $8 billion. Shut up.
I know.
$4
billion.
$4 billion in stock in the company that just made a $2 billion movie.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Just shut up.
I'm sure Disney must be so happy, though,
with what they're making. Yeah, I mean, if you're a Disney, Disney's looking at him like, George, shut up.
Just shut up. White slavers. That's a hell of a comment to make.
Whatever. And the funny thing is, like, you know, Lucasfilm and everything, all his people are still there. All the people that he hired, you know, Kevin Kennedy and De Pablo Hidalgo and all those guys, they're all still there.
Yeah, I think we'll see some of his ideas come to fruition in the next films because, you know, he gave a pile of ideas that he had.
Well, I heard they just threw out everything he had. I heard he had given them a concept for these films, and they just threw it out, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, very well could be.
Probably has something to do with Rastafari and aliens stepping in poo-poo.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, so the last of the movies, to get back to what I was saying, is the Boba Fett movie is the final... It's probably not the final movie, but it's the final one that's been announced, and that is going to be 2020. There's nobody attached to that or anything yet, so that one's kind of out there, up in the air. You know, who the hell knows who's going to direct or write or play Boba Fett or what the story will be. I'm kind of bummed. I wish that one was coming sooner, but I get it.
Well, I mean, you can only do so many films.
It's true. The Rogue One.
These are all $200 million plus films.
Well, they started with Rogue One as the first anthology film. So, I get it. Again, that's coming from that place of nostalgia, that story. It's maybe a little more familiar just because it's part of something that already happened.
Yep.
Who knows? But speaking of Boba Fett, it's a good segue to get into our holiday special talk.
It's the original Boba Fett.
The first appearance by Boba Fett.
Yeah.
In the Star Wars holiday special. So let's set the scene. I was not born when this showed. This aired in 1978.
Yeah, I was only 74.
Okay.
So I did not see this live.
Okay.
Or if I did, I may have. I have no recollection of it.
Well, it was not well received.
No,
that's for
nor should it be.
That's for damn sure. And you know, people will stand up for this thing. I wrote an article for Sound on Sight, which is now Pop Optic, where I used to write a couple of years ago about the holiday special. And it's only saving grace being that it did introduce Boba Fett as a character during an animation sequence, and we'll get
the whole thing should have just been that animation.
The animation sequence was great.
Yeah, the whole TV special should have just been that.
It should have, but it wasn't. I mean, that was like a very small fraction of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So, anybody who hasn't seen it, look it up on YouTube because it's worth watching, even though it's absolutely terrible.
Well, what I recommend for those out there is to go over to rifftracks.com and give them $10 and get the Rifftracks version, which is so, if you're going to sit through it, you're much better watching, listening someone riff it, because it's so much fun.
Yes. You know, this thing premiered on CBS, preempting Wonder Woman and The Incredible Hulk.
Ironically. So
imagine how, like, what a wonderful 3-hour block of nerd television, only to leave people horribly disappointed.
Well, I would think that people would just be bewildered. I mean, when you first watch it, it's bewildering.
Well, when it begins like an episode of the Brady Bunch with Wookiees. I mean, the tone is so weird and bizarre, and just what they do with the Wookiees kind of changes your whole perception of the Wookiees as like ruthless.
Well, the funny thing is, like, the first, like, 5 to 10 minutes is spoke entirely in Wookiee or Kashikian or whatever their language is, with no subtitles. So it's like a pantomime.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of sitting there like, okay, it's a mom, I guess, and a kid, and, you know, a Wookiee with no teeth. And you're just bewildered.
It plays like a sitcom, like a 70s sitcom. I mean, it very much plays like that. But at its best moments, it's not even as good as the worst episodes of Alf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so bizarre. But so the whole thing follows Chewbacca's family as they wait for him to come home for Life Day.
Yes, it's Mala, Itchy, and
Lumpy.
Lumpy. Mala, Itchy, and Lumpy, yeah.
You know, those classic Star Wars characters.
Oh, yeah. I got all those figures.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny.
You know what, though? Not for nothing, but I would not be surprised in the next couple of years, the way nostalgia works, that they don't put out a Mala, Itchy, and Lumpy figure set.
Oh, my God. They probably... I'm surprised they haven't already.
I'm shocked that nobody's done it. I'm shocked.
Somebody will now. Now that we've said it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just the way those three characters look.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like Lumpy is the young one, right? Lumpy's the kid.
Kid. Yeah.
I don't know. Like you watch Star Wars. I can imagine going to see the original Star Wars in theaters, and then seeing this and being so excited about it because this is the next thing that people see. You know, this is the next bit of Star Wars people get before Empire Strikes Back or anything. So imagine their shock.
Well, let me say one thing. For people who didn't grow up in that time, as awful as this is, and I think this is kind of a context that everybody forgets, television programming in 1978 was horrible. And Christmas specials that were bizarre like this were not uncommon.
Well, a lot of television was variety show driven.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. Paul Lynde had a Halloween special with Florence Henderson playing a witch and all. I mean, you watch this and you're like, what was going on? No, this was the norm. Okay. This was not odd. This wasn't even odd. It just so happens that it's Star Wars. So if everybody went back and pulled a bunch of 70s holiday specials, whether it be Christmas or Halloween or whatever, they would, you know, like I said, for those of us who lived through it, it's not as bizarre as people think.
No, it's off tone for Star Wars.
Wicked.
So it's a shock. It's like, I'm trying to think of a modern equivalent, like a modern movie that's out now that if they were to do a Christmas special, it would be so off the wall to do. I can't even think of anything big enough because, you know, we're lacking so many original movies these days. But like it just doesn't fit, and they shoehorn this Star Wars stuff into this kind of variety show format, you know, where you have Bea Arthur and Art Carney and Diane Carroll and all of these people, you know. It's a lot of B-listers and a lot of people who do the variety show circuit. It's kind of like the Muppet Show with Star Wars. I don't know. It's hard to wrap my head around. Well, even
the Muppet Show had better.
Yeah, the Muppet Show had better talent, better writers.
Yeah.
But it's just weird. It's just a bizarre hour of television.
Let's go through some of the highlights. So,
all right, let's start at the beginning.
So at what point is it Itchy or Lumpy? That's the little one.
Lumpy's the little one.
Okay, so Lumpy goes to the Chewbacca chessboard set there from the Millennium Falcon, and some sort of weird like Cirque du Soleil thing breaks out.
It's not. It's like holographic porn.
Yeah. No. Wait. No. That was.
Oh.
That's what Diane put on the helmet with Diane Carroll.
Diane Carroll.
No, this is the one with the little people dancing on the little chessboard.
Oh, the Jefferson Starship.
No, that's a whole other thing.
Oh my God, I'm not remembering this part.
Yeah, no, there's another part where it's basically like Cirque du Soleil.
Okay. See, I don't even remember that part.
It goes Cirque du Soleil, then Diane Carroll with the holographic porn.
Okay.
Software porn, and then Jefferson Starship.
All right, so
this special is a lot of people watching stuff.
It is a lot of people watching weird, really strange things.
Yeah,
A lot of it. I mean, it's all people watching stuff, really. Outside of the scenes with the Wookiee family,
right?
You know, you have them talking to Art Carney, who's a traitor on Kashyyyk, and even that, the tone of it, I felt like I was watching the opening of Fraggle Rock or something. It was really weird. But he's trying to say that he's sending Han Solo home with Chewbacca. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the Empire is there.
Right.
I'm not even going to try to make sense of the story here because there's no story.
Yeah, they're trying to intercept Chewbacca because they know he's coming home for Life Day.
Yeah.
You know, so he's an ex-con that they know is coming home.
Yep.
You know.
Well, let's talk about that Diane Carroll part.
Yeah.
Because it's weird on a couple of levels. It's weird, first of all, because it's like it's the grandfather Wookiee. What's his name? He must be...
Itchy.
Okay, so the grandfather Wookiee has this helmet,
mm-hmm.
which basically is holographic pornography,
right.
Softcore pornography. It's bizarre, but it's not even like Wookiee pornography. It's people. It's Diane Carroll,
right?
And Diane then she sings a song.
Yeah, she does a lot of cooing.
Yeah,
first
cooing, which is like I guess some kind of futuristic way of. I don't know.
A lot of, you know, oh, baby.
Yeah.
You want to touch me? I was made for you. And you're like, what is going on?
It's so weird. And then you have Jefferson Starship showing up as a holographic.
Yeah. And Jefferson Starship looks amazing. They look as 70s as you can get.
They do.
Like it.
And they sound awful.
The guitar player literally looks like the bass player from Spinal Tap. Like, they look like Spinal Tap, except they're not. You know what I mean?
You couldn't parody this thing better than it parodies itself.
No, you couldn't.
I mean, this thing out spaceballs.
Yes, it does. Yes,
and that's something.
Yeah. It is incredible.
Harvey Korman is in this as well.
Yeah.
Which is another strange part,
mm-hmm.
which I don't fully understand.
Well, the thing is, he does, like, what, three or four characters?
Yeah.
And he's basically doing bits.
He's doing bits. He's like a robot in one part, I believe.
Right.
The best part is where he's a chef.
Stir whips. Whichever that people can't. You can't get the stir whip stir out of your head once you've seen it.
Because Mala, who is Chewbacca's wife, is cooking their Life Day dinner. Right. I believe she's wearing an apron.
Wearing an apron, yeah.
So... they're very domesticated for Wookiees.
They very much are, yeah. And interesting enough, Mala is played by a male actor, and Itchy is played by a female actor.
Lumpy is
played by a female actor.
Yeah.
Mala is played by a male
actor. Yep. Lumpy is played by one of the elves from Ernest Saves Christmas.
Yep.
It's, you know.
So we have some gender fluidity going on with the Wookiees.
Yes. And, well, let's talk about the original cast members who make very small little appearances, mostly at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Skywalker's in it more than anybody.
A very well done up Luke Skywalker.
Yes, he is definitely wearing some makeup.
He's wearing an enormous... He's almost Kabuki-like in his appearance in this thing.
And it's all canned footage.
Oh, totally, yeah.
He probably did with zero context whatsoever.
Now, here's the funny thing. If you pay attention to Carrie Fisher's bit when she's talking to Mala, she's holding herself up at the table. She's holding herself up because I think Carrie had been into some chemical enhancements, I think, of
she got into the Wookiee medicine cabinet.
Could have been, yeah.
Oh, my God. But she sings a song at the end.
Yes, she does.
Which is maybe the best song of all. I mean, her song's better than Jefferson Starship's song.
Right. Well, hey, her mom did a show in Vegas for how many years?
That's true. That's true.
You know, when you're Debbie Reynolds' daughter, you're going to sing.
Yeah, you damn well better.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the worst song. At least for me, it's the worst song. Mm-hmm. And that's Bea Arthur, who is like the barmaid of Tatooine.
Yes, she is, yes.
And she basically takes the beloved Tatooine theme song and adds words to it and slows it down and you know, sings about all of her patrons, and
she has a Tatooine torch song.
Yes, but she like swings with like the scum and villainry. Obi-Wan's line: "Nowhere will you find a place with more scum and villainy in the galaxy." Yeah. That gets thrown right out the window. Because apparently things have lightened up since Luke left Tatooine. Yep. It's so weird. I hate it. I hate that part so much.
It is so much like these 70s, you know, variety shows, because it's basically vaudeville.
Yes.
And you could tell that nobody on the show, none of the writers, nobody knew anything about Star Wars. You know, they were just like, oh, we do. If they did, they had the most basic sense of it. You know, there was absolutely no idea of any.
Well, they should have at least got writers from like Laugh-In or one of those shows, and maybe they did. I don't know, but you know, they should have. If they were going for that, they should have taken writers from somewhere who was doing that. You know, the Muppet Show, like you said, was awesome. Well,
the funny thing is, the Muppet Show had an episode with Mark Hamill and C-3PO and R2-D2, which is actually a much better episode.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's a really classic episode.
Yeah, it's very enjoyable.
But this, I don't know what they're thinking here. I really, really don't.
I know what they're thinking. They're thinking we need to turn a quick buck. You know, we got the biggest movie in the world, so let's jump on it and do a little, you know.
So imagine people then going to see, you know, we lived, that was a different time where we didn't have the internet and stuff like that. So, you know, people were probably like, well, what the hell is the next movie going to be like?
Right.
You know, this was the in-between for New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And that's
the good news for them back then, because by the time I was old enough to see Empire, nobody remembered this. Like, nobody talked about it. Nobody remembered it. Because the good thing about back then, and the fact that nobody had VCRs, was that you really did. The stuff like this really just went away. You know, they really just absolutely went away. Nobody talked about it. When Empire came out, there was no discussion. You know, I was in, you know, sitting there with my Empire lunchbox at school, and nobody was like, hey, you remember that holiday special? None of that.
Yeah.
You know, it was gone. I hadn't even heard about this. Well, I'd heard about it probably, you know, somewhere in the late 80s, but I hadn't seen this until probably 2000. I'd say 2000 or 2001. I think it was only until I think the prequels came out and people said, oh, this is the worst thing ever. Then people started saying, oh, no. And then, because when you look at the copy of this, I mean, some enterprising person had a VCR in 1978, because all of the commercials from 1978 are on this, if you watch the full video.
Huh.
You know, there's a commercial for the Lady Garment Workers Union. A lot of union commercials, actually. The Auto Workers Union, the Garment Workers Union. There's a commercial for Doane's Pills.
You know? Wow.
So, yeah, whoever that one enterprising person is, I bet if George Lucas could track down, you know,
Yeah.
If he could track down patient one, he'd kick that person's ass.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god. Well, let's talk about the cartoon part.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cartoon, like we said earlier, is the one saving grace of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the cartoon was done by Nelvana.
Yeah.
Who also went on to do, I think they did the Droids cartoon series.
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s. But this little bit, it has a very distinct animation style that looks like it was pulled directly from the comic books, the Marvel comic books at the time.
Yeah.
And I love it. I think it's a great animation style. It's very vibrant and colorful. And it casts Boba Fett for the first time riding a sea monster that looks like the Loch Ness Monster. Mm-hmm. And it has Luke and R2 and C-3PO. R2, I always remember R2 when he moves, he has this kind of like wavy motion, which makes zero sense for an all-metal droid to be able to do, but it's just part of the animation. But Nelvana, I mean, they did a lot of the shows that I grew up with, like Care Bears.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been around for a very, very, very long time.
Right.
But they had, their style was very unique. I remember in the 80s watching the Tintin series, which I think was on Nickelodeon. It was one of my favorite series ever. And it's, you know, they did that as well. It's just so vibrant and so different. The way Saturday morning cartoons are supposed to be. So this doesn't really fit with the rest of the holiday special.
Not at all.
Where, I don't even remember. Where does it come from? How does it come into play? How do they segue into
it? It was, throughout the show, people are constantly given media devices. And I believe it was one of the media devices that Art Carney had or that he gave somebody, and they watched this on it. I could have been, I'm trying to remember if Lumpy was watching it in his room or Lumpy had turned the TV on. But it was something to that effect.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This movie is, it's like the Nostradamus of today, because it really predicts what the youth of today are like.
Yep.
It predicts the future. Everyone's always on their devices watching.
Everybody in the house, yeah.
Watching other stuff, which was not the way it was in the 70s. So
not at all.
That's a little strange.
There's a lot of solidarity in the 70s. Everybody had to sit around and play Candyland with each other or Sorry or Monopoly or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not a lot of people going into each individual corner and doing something else.
Yeah, on an electronic device. So that's a bit weird to think about, but I'm sure it's a complete accident. Yeah. They just needed a way to shoehorn everything into this wonderful hour.
Absolutely.
But do you like the animation? You enjoy
the animation? Oh, I love it. I enjoy it. You know, it's very, the job they did is very, it's a very 70s looking animation. You know, the 70s, you know, one of the things I don't like about animation today is everything's very homogenized.
Yeah.
You know, everything has that sort of 3D look. And it's even the Star Wars stuff, I like Rebels, but it looks not that much unlike everything else. Everything looks like 3D, whatever. And the beauty of the 70s was, like, all these different artists, when they animated, were so different from each other. And they had, you know, different takes and unique looks on stuff. And I think, even though, you know, people laugh about Han Solo's face being so long, you know, the faces being long in this animation, at least it's different. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it shares a something with anime. In that it does have that very stylized look, but it's not as lazy as some anime is with very minimal actual animation.
Right. Yeah. Just having a solid picture with wavy lines.
Or a couple moving eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it actually animates all of the characters pretty well.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But you know. It's the one saving grace. Maybe when we see that Boba Fett movie in 2020, he'll come in on a sea monster like this.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be pretty cool. I don't think it will happen, but that would be pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that's the only good part about this whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's just basically it ends after that with Carrie Fisher singing.
The Life Day Ritual,
The Life Day Ritual. Everyone's in their robes with their candles in some kind of cave.
Yeah.
They sacrifice a goat. I was waiting for that the whole time. The first time I saw it. It's very... I was waiting for the pentagram to be written in the sand. it's very that that kind of celebration.
Very cultish.
And the weirdest thing of it all is that it pans out, and it's all a bunch of Wookiees in robes, and they're all grunting at various octaves. Yeah. So it makes for a very strange chorus accompanying Carrie Fisher's beautiful song. Her Life Day song. It's so awful. But the worst thing of all about the Life Day song is that it's sung to the tune, just like the Tatooine song Be Arthur does, it's sung to the tune of the Star Wars, the main titles. Why do they have to do that? Don't add lyrics to these great... That's like Ennio Morricone going back and adding lyrics to his Fistful of Dollars soundtrack or something.
Right. You know? There once was a man with blue eyes who had a fistful of dollars.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I just can't.
I can imagine, sadly. I can't, because I've seen bad stuff like this before.
Ugh, man. It's a weird... I thought of something today's equivalent to this would be like when Avatar came out, since that was the biggest movie. If that winter after Avatar came out, we had a holiday special with Avatar, it would have cast like Neil Patrick Harris doing a song and dance number, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then
they'd have Beyonce in some virtual reality headset.
Exactly. But unlike this Star Wars special, people would not forgive it, and we probably would not have new Avatar movies on the way.
No.
Because people would very quickly write it off.
Yeah.
So I guess we're lucky that this happened in the time it did, because I'm not going to say that this would have ruined people's perception of Star Wars or their love of Star Wars, because they still would have done Empire Strikes Back, because let's face it, that Star Wars, when it came out, made so much money.
Well, I mean, we know. I mean, you know, we have history that shows that people did forget it, and when Empire came out, it was no harm, no foul. And
well, like now. It's like now with the prequels. You need a little more time these days in between to make something work, which they've done really well with The Force Awakens. So it's a different time, but, man, I hope we don't have a new Finn and Rey Star Wars Christmas special.
I don't see that coming in.
I don't see it happening either. Maybe we'll get a 4th of July.
At least with Disney, we know the production value would be high.
It would. For now.
Yeah.
The thing I worry about is that with all of these new Star Wars movies coming out, that fatigue sets in at some point.
I think that's a legitimate concern.
It will, but then the big worry for me is that Disney then starts lazily throwing Star Wars characters into things. Which, you know, they're in Disney Infinity. That's fine. That works. Yeah. They've done that well. But I don't want to see Mickey Mouse and Darth Vader and some kind of Christmas special cartoon that Disney puts out at some point.
That seems kind of likely, though.
It does, but I don't want to see it.
Maybe not Darth Vader because of his, you know, dark side, but certainly Princess Leia or Rey.
Yeah, see.
You know what I mean? Especially Rey, I can see that happening.
Yeah, and I just worry. I just worry that as these movies progress and, you know, they might see their audience taper off a little bit, and then they need to attract a newer, younger audience, because we're talking 5 years down the road. You know, I just worry that they're going to pull some cheap gimmicks like that.
Yeah, it's not their style, though.
It's not. It's not. Yeah. So hopefully it doesn't happen. We shall see in 5 years.
Yeah.
When we're doing episode...
Episode 200.
200 something.
Padawan.
Yeah. Well, I think we can end it. I think we've said all that we can say about the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Absolutely.
It's a new year. We have Force Awakens is still in theaters, so we still have a lot of Force Awakens stuff that we can talk about.
Right.
We might do some special episodes coming up specifically about different parts of Force Awakens and bring on some guests to talk about things.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new Star Wars movie coming out in December, so I'm sure we'll be getting first looks at that in the coming months. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to talk about this new year.
Absolutely.
But until then, we want you to enjoy your New Year's Eve or your New Year's Day, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. And think of it as your life day.
But before we let you go, in the spirit of Boba Fett, we have an interview with someone who played Boba Fett, Dickie Beer, who is one of the many stuntmen. He's actually the Boba Fett who landed in the Starlak Pit in Return of the Jedi. And Dickie's going to share with us some stories about what it was like to be Boba Fett and some of the other characters that he played.
So I'm here with Dickie Beer, who played several roles in the Star Wars franchise. Mr. Beer, so first off, hello. Let's talk about your experience in Star Wars. When did you first get involved with Star Wars?
It was 1982, I think. And I was approached by the stunt coordinator in England if I wanted to be one of the stunt guys on one of the Star Wars movies, which was Return of the Jedi. And I went like, yeah, it's another job, so I'll take it.
So let's talk about some of the different things they asked you to do. What were all, some of the different roles that you played in Return of the Jedi? I see a lot of different characters here.
Yeah, I played around the Sarlacc Pit. I was double for Boba Fett, and I played a Gamorrean guard, and the original one that I was always supposed to play was Barada. And I did some stunt doubling for Luke Skywalker.
Excellent. Of all the outfits you had to wear and all the stunts you had to do in Return of the Jedi, what was the most challenging thing that you had to do?
The bad one was the Gamorrean guard. That was awful to wear. That was really horrible because it was 120 NOH 8. And B, the costume was very, very heavy, and I extended arms, and the head was so big that you were actually rebreathing your own air. So it was horrible.
This guy's getting white-hatted after.
Oh, yeah. You would just pass out if you would have that head on for more than 5 minutes.
As far as the actual stunts, what was the hardest or a stunt that sticks out in your mind that you did for the film?
There are no hard stunts, really. Because when you prep yourself, then it's reasonably easy. The challenging thing was like when I fell into the Sarlacc pit, because that was the only place around where there was some shade. There were a lot of animals gathering in there, like snakes and scorpions, and so that was a challenging thing. As soon as you went in there, you had to really watch out for the snakes.
So the Sarlacc pit was, in fact, actually very dangerous.
It was, yes.
Well, excellent. So how did you feel about, here we are, you know, fast forward 30 years later, the love that people have for the characters that you worked on in the film, and obviously the franchise itself? And
I love the reaction that I get from kids, especially kids, when they come to my table and they finally see who was under a mask, who had the mask, the helmet on, and the surprise on their faces, and they go like, oh, is that you? Did you play this part? And I went like, yeah, it was me. And then I go like, oh, wow. You know, like, that to me is makes my day when I get kids around that are totally speechless because they finally see the guy that was in that costume. And what amazes me is the fact that sometimes I get in front of my table like four generations and they're all passionate about the Star Wars series, you know, the Star Wars movies. And I don't think there's any other movie that made that happen ever. So.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
One, two, three. This podcast has been a production of the Geek Dad Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed this content, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geekdad.